Just going to let the music play. Because I've missed it.
That's my jam right there.
Last couple of weeks here on the Common Good Politics podcast, we have not had the chance to listen to the theme music. But producer Dan is back.
I'm back.
And that means...
back in the saddle.
That means we've got music, we've got video, we've got all sorts of stuff. We've got the opportunity to chat together. My name's Rob Ryersey. I'm here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, alongside Dan Dietrich, who is, as Doug Padgett would say, somewhere outside of South Bend, Indiana.
Technically right in there, right in South Bend. Bend address.
Doug always says I'm somewhere outside of Fayetteville, Arkansas. I'm actually in Fayetteville, Arkansas. So anyways, not that any of that matters. What does matter is that we're going to have the opportunity today to talk about some of the news of the day, the week, and things that happen, and kind of talk about the political implications of all of that, and see what it all means, and view it all through the lens of the common good. So if you're you're following along, if you're watching along on Facebook or any of the other places where you might be able to do that, we'd love for you to say hello and chime in and be a part of the conversation. Dan, we've got some stuff to talk about. I think probably the big thing is you spent the last couple of weeks out on the We the People ride, which is the bike ride that Vote Common Good is sponsoring and doing, that is started in San Diego, California, and is ending up in St. Augustine, Florida, going across the southern border and raising awareness and the importance of having a common good border and immigration policy. And Dan, you were out there for a couple of weeks. Did you survive? I mean, we were a little bit worried about you. Did you survive?
I made it. I survived. Maybe even thrived. I don't know.
Oh, all right. So I when this whole thing was getting planned, I was like, hey, this is fantastic. I'm completely on board with this. There is no chance I'm doing this. But we did last year a march from Charlottesville, Virginia to Washington, D.C., highlighting the need for a common good racial reconciliation in our country. And we walked on average 13 miles a day for 10 days. And it just about killed me. Now, that didn't spur me on to, getting in shape and not eating McDonald's for breakfast. What it did is it just confirmed that I wasn't going to be going out on a bike. But Dan, you did. So tell us, can you give us this? I'm curious, how it was for you. Before we get into the immigration policy and the reason for it, can we take a couple minutes to just talk about what it's like to get up and ride on a bike all day? What was that like for you?
Oh, it was wild. The most I'd ever ridden was 25, 30 miles in Indiana, which is very flat. Well, this is kind of fun too. The very first night I get there, I fly into Tucson. And a driver that heard about our ride from Facebook picks me up at the airport, drives me to the Mexico border. Doug is texting me saying, just walk across the border. We'll find you.
Just walk across the border. Yeah. We'll find you.
So this stranger drops me off at the U.S.-Mexico border. I walk across and wander around a little bit. And then good friend Brandon Pfeiffer walks out of an alley and takes me to where we're staying for the night. But first day on a bicycle.
I got some follow-up questions here, so I'm going to interrupt you. Where were they? They were staying on the Mexican side of the border night?
That night we stayed at a refugee migrant center. They had a couple open dorm rooms, and we just stayed in there and ate breakfast with the families that were staying there. And at night we had a little like music party. They had some guitars. We played some music together, and nice. Really beautiful. So it was a great start to the experience, and just seeing firsthand that the folks coming to the border are mm-hmm. mostly families with small children.
Mm. Yeah.
And so it sort of breaks that narrative of
what time of day do you get up? Like, do you start riding?
Like a couple of days, it was like 5:30. We're up and at it, and you stumble around in the dark, get your gear on, and then you get on a bicycle and you ride for a very long time, just a brutally long time.
How long? Like, how long do you, like, in terms of hours?
I don't know. I just start measuring it in miles, and you try not to think about how long it takes to do it. But we were doing 60 miles a day. So 50, 60 miles a day, depending on like the
hills. Does that take all day?
It doesn't take all day. We try to be done before like the heat of the day, oppressive heat in the afternoon. And that's why you start early too, because it's still the desert out there.
How big of a group is it that's riding?
It varied from like 5 to 10. And then a couple days we met up with Mexican bike clubs. And so we had like a group of 30 people cycling on the Mexican side of the border. And it was really great.
Does everybody stick together, or does it break into different groups of like a lead pack going fast? And then, you know, the people like me who would be, you know,
I was definitely the caboose most of the time in that train. We didn't stick like right together, but usually within eyesight of each other.
Dangerous on the road?
You know, not too much. Like, especially in New Mexico, it was just these forever roads that would just go on into the horizon and disappear. And you wouldn't see cars for, you know, half an hour at a time. And then most of the cars you did pass were Border Patrol.
Any interactions with Border Patrol or the law enforcement folks down there?
Yeah, they were very active. They were detaining people every day. They'd say that they pick up multiple people every day. So we would chat with them occasionally. Every once in a while, they'd just stop and see what we were up to, if we were all right. You know, we've got a truck and trailer we're pulling, and so we'd park it next to the road. They'd stop and say, hey, you guys doing okay? And probably take a look to see that we're not trying to smuggle people. But they were very professional. They were courteous. And what was interesting is they were the first to say the wall doesn't work. Like, the wall slows people down a little bit. But people are getting over the wall. It's not stopping people. It's other technology and other very low-tech methods that they use to actually pick up people.
What do you mean low-tech?
So this was crazy. We kept seeing on our drive, there's a little like dirt path along the side of the road. And we kept seeing these big piles of tires with chains, like 3 tires attached with chains laying in the dirt. And we figured out that Border Patrol will drag these tires to smooth the dirt next to the road so that they can see footprints when people try to cross the road. And that's how they know if someone has made it past the border wall and has made it past this highway. So it's like super low tech, looking for footprints in the dirt. Like, it's kind of unreal.
Did you feel at any point like it was dangerous at all?
No, I never felt in danger. I mean, there was, you know, some, you know, trucks that didn't get out of the way fully that, you know, want to make their presence known kind of thing, but never felt like we were in any danger.
Well, that's good. Do you have a sense of like big takeaways?
Yeah, for sure. Some big takeaways. One, who is trying to cross the border. Again, I mentioned it's primarily like families, like young women, young mothers, sometimes men accompanying. Another was the just the safety of the border towns. This was reiterated to us time and again by people on both sides of the border. Like, this is a safe place to live. This is a safe place to raise your family. And people would say time and again, like, come visit here and see for yourself that it's not the disaster painted on the news.
So we're gonna talk about the GOP governor's 10-point plan. Apparently, I don't know, a dozen governors from Republican governors from around the country, you know, dressed up in their cowboy outfits, put on their jeans and big belt buckles and their, you know, either their camo or their hunting shirts and, you know, their fishing gear. And they, I mean, have you seen the photo of these
guys?
I have.
Yeah. It's like,
I mean, it's just, it's come on. Somebody wears.
And many of these, they're not from the South. They're not from the West.
No, like, it was so ridiculous. They were, you know, cosplay hunters, and who went down to the border and held a press conference. And so, you know, we've been seeing from both, you know, in news images from there. And then, you know, FoxNews.com this morning. And yeah, I read FoxNews.com. So FoxNews.com this morning, the big headline is all about, you know, the chaos at the border as a result of, you know, the Biden administration's policies. Did you see any of that? Did you experience any of that? Are they in a different place than you were? Like, what do you make of, like, this, you know, we're getting this media narrative and we're getting this narrative pushed by these GOP governors that say it's chaos at the border. Mm-hmm. And you're saying, hey, we were going through border towns and people are saying, yeah, it's safe. This is a nice place to live.
Yeah, we weren't near, you know, where the Haitian refugees are trying to seek asylum. So that's a different situation. But I was along for 250 miles along the border, passed through a bunch of little towns, some bigger towns, and saw none of that chaos. It felt safe the whole time. And the border is basically closed to anyone coming from Mexico because of Title 42. And so this idea that there's just this mass of people getting across these border towns, it's just not happening. I mean, people are trying to cross through the desert, which is super dangerous, and they're being picked up by Border Patrol, but not in this chaos masses kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is this... there's kind of this perception, this conventional wisdom that, you know, the southern border is just this stream of people coming across it. It is, you know, insanity. It is, you know, chaos. And the reality is much, much different from that.
Yeah. Yeah. Much different.
Yeah. So let's talk about, you know, the cosplay Republican governors who were down at the border, and they, you know, they put out a 10-point plan. And, you know, even before we're, and we're going to jump into this and kind of look at these things, but I, even before we do that, I just want to, I just want to talk about the political implications of this a little bit. there are many issues that don't move people, right? There are many issues that people, you know, how, like, they believe what they believe and they can fit whatever happens into the categories that they believe, and they're set and they know, you know, what team they play for, what team they root for based on that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, there's not, it happens that people shift and move politically, but it's pretty rare, and it's the issues that move people politically are pretty rare. Mm-hmm. Like, people are like, it's a pretty, like you know where the pieces are on the game board. One of the issues that actually moves people is the issue of immigration and how we treat people at the border. Mm. In the work that we do with Vote Common Good, particularly in the lead up to the 2020 election, we did some polling of religiously motivated voters, people who are people of faith, who in 2016 voted for Donald Trump and then in 2020 were not going to vote for Donald Trump. And so we wanted to find out what were the things that moved you away from Donald Trump? And what we found was two things. One was that there was a sense of how unkind Donald Trump was, and his unkindness really, really bothered people. Mm-hmm. And that unkindness, so that's kind of like a general character quality kind of thing that came through. But that unkindness was most personified or encapsulated in a policy through the president's border policy. And what we found, both through our polling and anecdotally, and you know, we did a project called Hindsight 2020, talking to former Trump voters who weren't going to vote for him again, and mm-hmm. and recording their stories. And I think you could, if you're interested in it, you could probably still find it on the Vote Common Good website. And what we found is that the number one issue that moved people in terms of policy was kids in cages. That was the thing that when they saw, you know, these cages on the southern border with, you know, kids in them, and listen, like there's a whole lot to talk about that, you know, that's a, there's a whole discussion to have about the optics of that. And, you know, that was that policy in place during the Obama years, and why wasn't it highlighted then? And, you know, but for whatever reason, Trump's callousness to that and his unkindness about that really got tagged to him and stuck to him. And that was the issue that moved people. So I say all this to say that immigration and border policy and what happens at the border and the optics of it moves voters in a way that many other issues don't. And so what Republicans are trying to do right now is while Democrats were successfully able to paint Trump as callous and uncaring about the border and the people crossing the border, Democrats now are faced with Republicans retaliating on that same issue and painting Joe Biden and his administration as allowing chaos to happen at the border. And there is a concerted effort amongst Republicans right now to say that Joe Biden has been ineffective, unable to control the border, unable to have any kind of order along the border, and playing into a narrative, trying to create this narrative that Joe Biden is ineffectual and unable to execute in terms of what he does. And what's interesting is there's going to be the chaos discussion about Afghanistan. There's going to be the chaos discussion about the border. There's probably going to be another one. And you can see a political narrative being built to that will be damaging to Joe Biden in 2022 and Democratic candidates for Congress, and then also for Joe Biden himself in 2024, if he chooses to run again or whoever the Democratic nominee is at that point. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think what we're seeing here is that there is this is a page out of a playbook, right? Like this is a concerted effort that is actually happening, where it is no mistake, it is no surprise, it's no coincidence that a group of Republican governors are going to the border dressed up like, you know, they just walked out of Cabela's. And I can't get enough of these guys in their ridiculous outfits. You know, they it's no coincidence that this is happening. It's no coincidence that the front page of FoxNews.com today and many days is chaos on the border. This is a concerted effort by Republicans to take advantage of this. And you know, the Haitian asylum seekers plays right into that. You know, the images of Border Patrol using whips against human beings plays into that. you know, these lined up porta potties with drying clothes on top of them plays into that. And so, you know, the GOP comes along then, these governors come along and they say, okay, Joe Biden is creating chaos on the border. He doesn't have a plan. He can't fix it. We've got a plan. We've got a 10-point plan that's going to fix it. And they're trying to highlight this kind of chaos. I don't know, Dan, I've talked for a while. Do you have any thoughts about that? I just want to put what's happening into a broader context. It's about damaging the Biden administration and creating a political narrative about them that, frankly, if they're not careful, it could stick because immigration issues move people like this. This could be a problem for the Democrats.
Yeah, it definitely could be. And it's definitely going to come up in the midterms and the next election cycle. And Republicans know that this is a button they can push to activate voters and make people afraid or angry. And that translates into getting people to the polls. And so they're pushing that button.
So let's talk about this 10-point plan. And you know, see, you know, what these folks are proposing. So the first point is continuing Title 42 public health restrictions. Dan, you mentioned Title 42 earlier.
Yeah.
Do you know what that is?
Yeah. So Title 42, it's an old piece of law from like the 1800s that basically says if there's a health concern, we can close our borders. And Stephen Miller of the Trump administration sort of revived this and used it to seal our borders during COVID. COVID was the excuse, but the Biden administration has kept it, even when courts have said, actually, this doesn't look legal. And the Biden administration has defended it and continues to defend it. So that's what's funny about like seeing this as top of their list. It's like, well, Biden's your guy then, because he's on board with this.
And again, the reality and the optics are completely different.
Yeah.
And so you'll hear, you know, if you watch the Sunday shows, if you watch, you know, cable news, you will hear Republican talking heads say things over and over, just repeating over and over and over and over again, things like, you know, we don't have, you know, the spread of COVID is happening because people are coming across the border with COVID. It's illegal immigrants who are the ones that have the coronavirus and are spreading it. And it is like there's no facts behind that. There's no truth to that. There's no reality there. The reality is that the spread of COVID is because of unvaccinated people. We have an unvaccinated pandemic but because there is so much, you know, the border feels so far away and people know it's important, but they don't know what's going on down there. There's this sense of like, oh, that must be happening. And this just plays into that like, oh, well, people with COVID are coming across the border. We got to keep them out.
And this is just anecdotal because it was just at one border station where we were detained. But Border Patrol did not seem concerned about COVID precautions. So we were coming back through. Did I tell you about this? How we got detained by Border Patrol?
No, tell us.
Yeah. We were coming back from Mexico, just our SUV. We went over for dinner for the night. Coming back, and we go through the checkpoint. They say, everyone's got to get out of the car. Everyone out. Leave all your stuff. You're going inside. So they put us in a... like one of these glass cells inside the facility. And going in, we ask like, hey, we don't have our masks. Should we go back and get our masks? They're like, we don't care. So we go in with this, you know, building full of other people being detained and other workers, and mask precautions were not taken seriously. We weren't like given temperature checks or told to use hand sanitizer. And so this idea that Border Patrol is super concerned about COVID, maybe it was just this one border crossing, but it doesn't ring true.
It was. Yep. That's ridiculous. Yep. Okay. So point number one, like they're trying to make a point over something that is not like it's, it's a scarecrow. It's a boogeyman. It's a false reality.
Sorry to hammer on point number one, but talking with people on these border towns, Republicans and Democrats alike, they're saying Title 42 is killing our economy because these border towns rely on cross-border economies. So
yeah,
it's hurting Republican mayors' towns, you know?
Yep. Okay, so the second one is reinstating the migrant protection protocols or the Remain in Mexico policy started under President Donald Trump. You know, basically what, you know, Trump's policy was is, hey, stay there. Don't come here. Now, this is, you know, particularly difficult because I think so often in when we talk about border stuff, we talk about immigration. I think we often conflate two different things that are happening. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between immigrants and asylum seekers.
Yeah.
Okay. And immigrants are people who, you know, are coming into the country, going through the process, getting visas, like all of that kind of stuff, because they want to live in the United States. Asylum seekers are people who essentially are running from, you know, horrible situations, persecution, violence, and terrible situations where they're at, that literally are running for their lives and are seeking political asylum. Now, there is no way to apply for political asylum until you land your feet in the country that you are seeking asylum from.
Yeah.
Or to, seeking asylum to. You have to somehow get into the country. And so, you know, you watch spy movies, or you watch, you know, historical dramas, or, you know, if you watch the show For All Mankind, which was, you know, this great Apple TV show, which was this alternative history thing about going to the moon. And there is a Russian cosmonaut on the moon who gets hurt, and he gets taken into the American base on the moon where they're like, their doctors are taking care of him. And he's now able to seek asylum from the United States because he's on United States property. Mm-hmm. If he's standing outside the door of the American base, he can't do it. You can't do it until you put your feet on the ground within the country that you're seeking asylum. So what we have is people that literally are running for their lives, and there is no process for them to be accepted into our country until they get here. Mm-hmm. And they've got to like be creative about the ways that they get here. They've got to be able to sneak in. And it, and like, that's the way the system works. Now, you might say, well, we need a different way to apply for a political asylum. Sure, maybe. Yeah. But this is what the system is now.
Yeah. And it's the legal system. This is the appropriate way to do it as we've designed it.
Yes. A person that gets their feet on U.S. soil seeking asylum, like, that is, like, they're legal. Like, that's what... like, that's what the legal process is.
That's what we're telling people to do.
yeah, exactly. So the stay in Mexico policy was like, don't seek asylum. Don't come here. We're not going to help you. We're not going to, you know, offer, you know, comfort and support and help to you regardless of the situation that you're coming from. And these Republican governors kind of like that. Like, nah, we're not going to be the shining city on the hill, like Ronald Reagan said. We're going to, you know, completely change.
And so Title 42 erases that option. So now people presenting themselves at border crossings saying, I'm seeking asylum, are just sent back. They're not allowed to start the process. They're not given an interview, you know, a credible fear interview. they're just sent back.
So I think it's so like I it's just really important for people to understand the difference between the two and what's happening, because they get conflated. Like what's happening with these Haitian folks that are trying to make it into the United States, they're asylum seekers. Mm-hmm. They're people who are running for their lives and are here for help. And getting onto our soil is the way to get that help.
Yeah.
Allegedly. Yeah. All right. So that's point number two. Point number three, securing the border by completing the border wall. Dan, did you get a chance to see the wall up close?
Oh, yeah. We saw the wall up close, both sides, you know, touched it, looked at it, knocked on it. And, again, Border Patrol will be the first to say, like, this is one tool in a toolkit, and it's not even our best tool.
I know that for me, when I had a chance to be along the border a couple of years ago and get up close to the wall, one of the things that really kind of came home to me was just the environmental impact of it.
Yeah.
That, like, the wall doesn't just make it hard for people to move across the land, but there are animals that, you know, that ecosystems rely on that are now unable to migrate and move like they have in the past. And, you know, there is just all sorts of, like, it's just a bad, bad idea in so many ways.
Yeah. And it's so wasteful. We spent some time on one section of the new Trump wall. It's 30 feet tall. And previous to that, there was nothing except for this invisible wall, they call it. It's a series of telephone poles with, you know, heat sensing devices, mm-hmm. radar, microphones, video cameras. And Border Patrol said that was almost completely effective. They didn't have any crossings in that stretch because the technology wall is so much more effective. But we wanted it bigger and better and brighter, and so they spent $21 million per mile to build this unnecessary border wall that people get over in a matter of seconds using super low-tech ladders and devices. It just up and down, boom. Yeah. So fiscal conservatives out there should be upset.
Wow.
For a wall that Border Patrol said, no, we don't really need it.
Yeah, but, you know, it makes for a good chant, right? You know, good political chant. All right, let's move on to the next one because we're all tired of talking about the wall. End policies that allow humanitarian parole of some migrants. So basically, like, if you get caught, we're going to, you know, parole you for humanitarian reasons. And they're saying, no, we should keep you in cells. We should make life miserable for you.
Yeah.
We should keep you in horrible situations and not parole you, not let you free, you know, because we have compassion. We should make things as hard and as difficult as we possibly can for you.
Because cruelty is the point. It's the deterrent.
Yep. Yep. Yes. Clearing the judicial backlog of 1.4 million pending immigration cases. Now, on the surface, that sounds good, right? Yes, we've got this backlog. There's not enough immigration courts. There's not enough judges to process all of these cases. And listen, water follows the path of least resistance, right? Like water flows in a way that that is easiest. It will flow along the path of least resistance. People migrating to our country, immigrating to our country, will do the same thing. They will flow, they will migrate according to the path of least resistance. Now, what does it tell you that our policy and our process that we have in place is more difficult to navigate than crossing a river or crossing a desert?
Yeah.
Climbing a wall and risking your life is a more advantageous way to get into our country than to navigate the process that we have put in place. It ought to tell you that something is desperately broken in our system.
Yeah.
And one of those things is that we don't have enough immigration judges. We've got this huge backlog. Now, these Republican governors want these immigration hearings to happen so that people can then be deported and sent back.
And under Title 42 and the rest of the policies, they would be, because there's no question about it.
Yeah. Now, I would much rather have enough justices and judges working in our immigration courts to, you know, to process these things and each case be evaluated on its own merits. The other thing that happens is that, like, in these judicial courts, people seeking, you know, immigration status in the United States, people who have these hearings, they don't have representation unless they can afford it themselves. And, you know, clearly the vast majority of them can't. There is no public defender. There, like, the system is just tragically difficult to manage. And that's why you end up with children representing themselves in these cases before judges. It's just, it's heartbreaking. The system is broken. Mm-hmm. These Republican governors are pointing that fact out, but not because in good faith they want a system that seeks compassion and justice and kindness and goodness in the world, because they want to just, you know, throw people out as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems like a good spot, Rob. I've got this video. We got to sit down with the mayor of Douglas, Arizona. It's a border town. And he describes himself as a fiscal conservative. He ran under that platform and just had some, I think, helpful perspectives about this issue. And his whole thing is, like, the bottleneck is asylum hearings. Like, we should be able to let people have a hearing in a timely fashion. So I'll hit this video. It's real quick. It's like 3 minutes. And then we'll talk some more about it.
I'm Mayor Donald Hewish from Douglas, born and raised here. This is my hometown. And welcome to Douglas. It's a safe town. I know the impression that many people have throughout the country is that it's lawless, that there's shootings going on, that there's all kinds of crime. Nothing could be further from the truth. The values that people have here are based on family values, belief in Christ, and that permeates throughout our community, and it helps us be able to reach out and try to help others. But there needs to be a better system. Yeah. The effect of the policies that are made back in Washington, D.C. affect us day in and day out. I would certainly encourage the federal government to install, either through video conferencing to administrative law judges, or training some local pastors or somebody to be able to have hearings for these people that are coming up wanting to seek a better life.
Yes, they'll make minor changes. Like, they'll allow people to seek citizenship that have been here for a certain number of years. They'll do all those things, what they call amnesty, but then it just goes way to the right or way to the left. Yeah. And I'm not one to say it needs to go to the middle. It needs to go to what's right. And what's right is to be able to allow these people to have some type of hearing. And if we tell them no, then it's no.
Yeah.
At least they know.
At least they know.
But it just beyond me, the technology that we have now and the ability to be able to teleconference, and we need to be able to have these people have a hearing within a week.
Yeah.
And then if they have that hearing within a week, I'm sure we can figure out how to put them up for a week.
Yeah.
And protect them, and so that they can go on and be with their families here. Yeah. Most people that cross our borders don't want to stay here. They have family elsewhere. You guys come from Minneapolis and South Bend and Chicago. That's where they want to go because they have family up there. And to me, to deny somebody access to their family is just inhumane. These people are hungry for freedom. And some of them physically hungry, some of them, you know, spiritually hungry, whatever it is. And we have it here. And so if you see your little children, they're starving. You don't see their future other than having to participate in a gang or something to be able to survive down there. What are you going to do? You're going to take those means to try to get them up here and take the chance. And it just breaks my heart every time I read of a death coming across this border. Why can't we, if you want a wall, build a wall, but open the gate and have it orderly and have them come through and be able to enjoy the blessings that we have here in the United States.
Mm. I like that last line. If you want a wall, build a wall, but open the gate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, one of my favorite things near the end of the Bible in Revelation 22, when it describes like the city that has this huge wall around it. And very specifically, it says, and like the gates never close.
Yeah.
And the, and the whole thing about it, like the whole thing about it always being day, like there, the sun always shining, it always being day. Like that's a reference to this idea that the gates never close. That like nighttime is when the gates close and people are kept out, mm-hmm. but it's always daytime. The gates are always open. People are always welcome.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, really, really beautiful kind of thing. Wow. Really great. Yeah. So let's breeze through some of these other things, Dan, that these Republican governors are suggesting. Resuming the deportation of all criminals who are illegally in the United States. Again, this is a, you know, a straw man.
Yeah.
Just not a thing,
yeah.
You know. You know, it's if you ever work in, just by way of analogy, if you ever work in customer service, if you ever been a manager of on a customer service team, you know, I have at times, and I've had, you know, people on the phones or people come in, you know, to talk to me, and they'll say, oh, like everybody's upset about this thing. Everybody's upset. And I say, well, how many calls have you gotten about that issue? Well, two. Out of how many calls that we've gotten? Hundreds. Okay. So maybe that's something to talk about, but it's not like a crisis thing. When we turn anecdotes into, you know, data points that are, you know, we assume that the anecdote is applicable to everything and that's the way it is across the board, it's not the case. So you see, you know, 60 Minutes does a report about, you know, someone who is an undocumented person who commits a crime here in the United States. Listen, that's an anecdote. It is one story. It is not representative of every story. And we have this way of like exploding these anecdotes into being, mm-hmm. you know, thinking, oh, this is the way it is for everything when it is not. Can you tell I've got opinions about this?
Me too.
I'm just bringing it. So adding federal resources specifically aimed at human trafficking and drug trafficking.
Well, here's the thing with that one. That sounds great. And again, what the average Border Patrol agent that we met would say is this is what we signed up to do. We signed up to like try to catch drug traffickers. We didn't sign up to like put, you know, a mom and her kid in a cell.
Yep.
Like these people aren't a threat to our nation. They aren't a threat to our communities. And it's actually detracting from our actual job of trying to catch drug traffickers and human traffickers.
And I would just, and this is totally petty of me, and I understand that, but aren't these conservative Republican governors who think that federal spending doesn't solve problems?
Uh-oh. One case where throwing money at it works.
Yeah.
Bigger walls, more guns.
Yeah. Yep. Reentering into all agreements with the Northern Triangle countries of Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, as well as Mexico. I'm not sure. I don't have knowledge about like what the impact of that would be and what these agreements are that we've pulled out of. I thought the Trump, you know, approach of America first and pulling out of agreements with international countries was, you know, international countries. That's a dumb phrase. With other countries, you know, that was the way that we do things under the Trump administration. Now we need international partnerships. I don't know. Dan, do you have any insight into the Northern Triangle countries?
Not a ton, other than I know some of us were disappointed in Vice President Harris when she visited some of these countries and said to the people of those countries, do not come here.
Yeah.
And I think that was frustrating for a lot of people. That was an attempt to establish a relationship with Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, but it seemed like a weird stance for...
And maybe rather than entering into agreements with these countries that, you know, maybe we, the United States, should stop destabilizing these countries and creating the conditions in which, you know, people are running for their lives. So sending a clear message to potential migrants to not come north.
So they must have loved Vice President Harris's message. They must be big fans. Because she literally said those words.
Yeah. And then deploying more federal law enforcement officers. Ugh. Okay, there's a couple things about this. One, this is pandering to a voting base, and Republican governors sending the message to one of the very few unions that supports Republicans, saying basically, hey, we're going to try to get more money to get more jobs for your union. Like that's part of what this is about. Another thing is that, like, federal law, we don't need more federal law enforcement officers. Like, it's, you know, I thought the wall was supposed to work. Why isn't the wall working? Why do we need more people? Right. And maybe it's time for us to wind up, Dan, because I'm moving it from, you know, just a little bit snarky to being actually really, really annoyed with this. But, you know, this is
just pandering.
More ICE officers, more CPB officers is not the answer. In fact, you know, I think there's many of us who think that more law enforcement officers in general is you know, just going to cause more problems.
Yeah. Yeah. If anything, we need to spend more money on humanitarian aid and infrastructure at the border to welcome people that are legally seeking asylum. And if we want to spend some money there, that'd be great. But when we were down there, it was like an occupied military zone. Like, Border Patrol is everywhere. So this idea that we don't have enough, it's like, no, they're everywhere. And like these stations have 500 plus agents, plus civilian contractors, plus the army. Army's down there. I don't know if they're supposed to be, but they had these radar trucks. The Border Patrol is working closely with the army to detect people.
One of the things that I learned when I visited the border a couple of years ago was that within 100 miles of the border, of the border of the entire United States, all the way around,
Water borders,
not just the southern border. Within 100 miles inland of the border, Customs and Border Patrol, CBP, which I think I said CPB earlier, because I was mentally trying to run it through my head. Customs and Border Patrol officers, Immigration Customs, what does ICE stand for? Immigration Customs
Enforcement.
Those two agencies, which are the law enforcement agencies that operate there, are not bound by the Constitution. Things like Miranda rights, due process, stop and seizure, all of the things that, you know, restrain law enforcement throughout our country do not apply, are not a part of how these law enforcement agencies operate within 100 miles of the border. So basically what we have, and listen, you can look this up. There's been CNN articles about it. There's a map that shows like what that looks like that you can find on, it was CNN that covered this and talked about it. What that means is that within 100 miles of the border, law enforcement in these agencies can do basically anything they want legally.
They can detain you. They can search you. They can,
That ought to be terrifying.
Your constitutional rights are out the window if you're within that 100-mile belt.
And here's the thing. 75% of all Americans live within that 100-mile belt.
Mm-hmm. For the party of, like, personal liberties, that should be concerning.
Yeah. like and I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything, but like which is what conspiracy theorists always say right before they, the opportunity, the mechanism, the legal mechanism to enforce in a fascist way the dictatorial choices of a not duly elected leader, like, are in place. Like the levers of power exist and could be utilized by someone very, very nefariously. Mm-hmm. Like, we currently have a situation that is tenuous and terrifying that's already in place. And these Republican governors are saying, we need more of these people. Mm-hmm. We need more of these law enforcement officers who can operate outside of the Constitution and could easily be used and deployed against 75% of the population of our country, which are within their jurisdiction and can be turned in some fascist, nefarious way. It's a really scary thing.
Yeah. All in the name of Homeland Security. And we gave up so many of our rights after 9/11 because we were scared, because we thought that would keep us safe.
Yeah. So, Dan, you have been down riding on the border. What if somebody who's listening says, I want to go ride on the border? You can do it, right?
You can do it. Yeah.
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 Go over to wethepeopleride.org.
.org.
I think it's a .org. Go over to wethepeopleride.org. You can find out all about what is happening with Vote Common Good. My wife is headed down on Thursday to ride along the border.
Hopefully, and really,
she's going to have a great time.
If I can do it, anyone can do it. I'll put that out there.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm not going to. but if you want to, there's ways to participate. And listen, frankly, we could use your help financially because, we've got people who, get flat tires and, need food and shelter as they make this ride, trying to bring some awareness, trying to heighten the narrative that that we need a common good border and immigration policy, a common good one, which is not what we got from the GOP governors last week. Mm-hmm. What we need is one that is filled with compassion, kindness, justice, and goodness. So thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for being along. Hopefully you learned some things, and encourage you to check out wethepeopleride.org and be a full participant in trying to bring about a common good border and immigration policy. And thanks for listening, and we will talk with you again soon.
Bye, everybody.